Welcome back. It's been a while. More or less, we're holding over here in the it's Yud Gimel Amid Aleph. There are a few pieces after what we spoke about, but there isn't much morale in it. So we're sticking most of the pieces. There's a lot of morale. It's if you're looking at Ein Yaakov, it's Mem Zayin, and it's referring back to the reason why it's here is he had said before that because Shimshon did this, he was zeichah to this, because he did this, he was zeichah to this. It was a long arichus of different people that was zeichah different things. One of them is Yosef, so it's going back to it. Pisgah. In other words, it's a piece stuck in over here. It's in the Gemara. I mean, it's in the Gemara, but it's basically referring back to what it said before. Pisgah. Yosef zocha likvas aviv. Vaishnomi kardich sivayal Yosef likvas aviv. Vayalu itoi. Kolavdi paroi, vehoda, kvichol beis Yosef ve'echov beis aviv, umayishel besayif, it says ve'yeshev Yosef mitzrayim hu ve'echov, vehoda kolam yitok beis aviv. So, amar bechem betchilat shalei roa b'chvoidon she'yisrael nog ben kovid, le besayif shalei b'chvoidon nog ben kovid, and that's one nekuda. Then it says, vayavoyad goyin ha'otad, it says they all hung their crowns around it. Next one, Memches. Vayispa shal misbit gadol, v'kavod moed, tana filo susam filo chamoirim, kim shigiu lamarza machpela, osa Esav v'kome akiv. So here we have the interaction with Esav. Esav said, omalu mamre kiris arba hu chevron, v'amre b'yitzo kiris arba, arba zugis hoyu. Adam chava, Avram sari, Yitzhak Rivka, Yaakov Leia, Iu cover Leah b'didei, so Yaakov, he had the right to bury Leah in his. By the fire to deal, and I'm the one who has the other one. Amr Leah, Zivinta, you sold it to him. Amalu nihid Zvine b'chirusa. Maybe I sold my chelk b'chayra p'shitusim Zvine. Am le'indich siv b'kivya shakrizi b'eretz Kanan. Bar Rabbi Yechanan, Mishum Rav Shimei Yotzadok, Ein Kira Loshem Echira, and so on. So, there'll be a hemshech here, but let's stop at this because the morale speaks about this nekuda, and he explains something about the dalet zugos. So the morale says shenikratom dalet zugos. So basically, the morale's diuk is the word dalet zugos. It's keilu. It's not just that happened to be these people buried. It didn't say like there's no more room. I should have said there was a small place, not enough room, and that's really what seemed to have happened. There was room only for a few people, and you know, he told Yaakov, you chose to put Leah there, so tough luck. So the Maral explains that the Kvuras Dalet Zugois has in itself a special meaning as Dalet Zugois. Pirish, Hamokam Azehu Royu Li Yisoy De Hoylam. The place is worthy only for people that are foundational. Kakol dor v'oimed b'yisoid shaloi. V'amokim roi la'arba, ki lo'oilam shetach ha'mokim z'dalet al dalet, k'mo sh'yedua, sh'nosnu sh'ir mokim adem dalet al dalet. V'chein kol mokim shetach shaloi miruba. O'lekach ho'yo ovet sh'im yisoid mi'odem, da'in odem arishin, v'gimu ovet z'akdoishin, nikbor mi'mokim sh'shmoy kiris arba. Ki mokim z'ashika arba roi lehem, v'avur ki arba ho roi le'mokim v'shemarnu. So the Maral says over here the following. Whenever we look at any infrastructure, whenever we look at something that is doing something, we ask ourselves, what is it built on? For instance, let's take something, a house is obvious. The first thing before builder is going to build a house, he has to know that the ground can hold a house. If the ground is soft, mushy, whatever it is, as long as it's in that state, you can't build a house in it. That's obvious. But there's more than that. I have, for instance, I have a framework of laws in a society, governing a society. The question is, what exactly is the society that I want? What are these laws standing on? Justice, efficiency. One could say, for instance, capitalism is a very efficient society. So the framework of economic law that's capitalist nature is standing on the bedrock of efficiency. A person might make a claim that socialism is more fair, more equitable. So it's standing on a different bedrock, and that is the bedrock of fairness. Sometimes people make that mistake because when you're arguing, let's say, when you're arguing, is socialism better or capitalism better, most of the time it ends up that you're talking about two different things. Are you asking me which is more effective? Or are you asking me which is better, nicer, gooder, whatever you want to call it? Now, you could argue sometimes on the same plane, but most of the time, one person is saying, well, capitalism is a lot more efficient. The other one says socialism is a lot more fair. So, at the end of the day, what are you arguing about? The first question always is, what are we arguing about? What is it standing on? I want to make a comparison to something that it's quoted from Shari Kedusha of Chaim Vital. It's quoted quite a lot. He asks, if Midas Tovas are as important as the Mashkichim Yeshivas say, then why doesn't the Torah mention it ever? You have some remes of, Hashem Yisachayel, fine, but tachlis, no shara bitochum, no shara anova, no shara this, no shara that. So he says very famously that it's derechez kodma l'teira. So people don't get quite right. They think, they think it's obvious. Something along those lines. It's not what it means. It's not all that obvious, and certainly the details are far from obvious, even after we have all the Moses firm. What it means is as follows. Midos are the personality of the person. They are the person's basic attitudes. So if I come along to a person and I try to sell him ruchnius, if the person doesn't have an aptitude for ruchnius, then all my arguments are going no place. Someone told me there was a fellow here whose mother, they're all Silver Spring family from way back when, and his mother was the head of the local chapter of March of Dimes. For those of you who don't remember, probably not, nobody, when March of Dimes was the charity, and March of Dimes dealt with kids that had been born with, it wasn't, what was it for? Cystic fibrosis. It was for something, some sort of congenital defect from birth. And cerebral palsy, I think it was cerebral palsy kids. And they would send out everybody envelopes to collect 10 cents, when 10 cents could add up to something. And that was it. So his mother was the head of the chapter, and she went around, and he went around the block collecting, money from people for it. So, you got a whole litany of answers. I gave already. I gave at the office. I sent in a check. Even though there was no, fine. He said he knocked on one door, and the person, he starts talking. Says, "Oh," he said, "I don't do charity." So he says, "No, it's very legitimate." He says, "No, you're right. It's very legitimate. It's very nice. I just don't do charity." And he was like stunned because he didn't have where to go with that conversation, because once you're disagreeing on the axiom of whether charity is good or not, then you really have no place to argue on. You're not standing on the same place. If you both agree charity is good, the question is this a valid charity or not? I'll show you. But if I don't have the basis for it, so if I take a person who's not a good person, And I tell them this is Ruchnis because Ruchnis is good. And if you learn a lot, you become refined and good and better. I'm not interested in becoming refined, good, and better. So there's no, in other words, Torah is, there's the emes of Torah is that Torah is telling a good person, a decent person, how to become a divinely inspired person, how to go beyond. If you're really hooked into good and you recognize it in the elements of chesed and savlonis and harispanim and all these things. So now let me tell you what you can build on top of that. But midos are the bedrock in the person's personality. And Rav Volbe writes it in one of his things and is working on Musa and so on. He basically says, you know, working Musa is a wonderful way to develop your character. But if you have a serious flaw, if you have a serious anger management problem, then you're not an Adam yet. This is not, you know, Musa says, I'm doing for you. You need a psychologist. You need somebody to get some basic stuff in because there's nobody to build. So in the world of Ruchnius, you have a basis on what you're building. Derech Eretz, Kadmo L'Torah. It also, the avos, vis-a-vis Torah, is the same thing. The avos are understood to represent, in terms of people, Derech Eretz, Kadmo L'Torah. The avos are affiliated with certain midos, basic midos, and they were not given Torah, but they created the persona that Torah can be shayach to. They created Yisrael. They created a type of Uma whose basic psyche is possible to put Torah on it. So of this covenant, it's true also in the world of the Midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We speak about Gimel Rishonis, we speak about certain Midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are the basis upon which he acts. So we have what we call Chachma and Bina and Day and all these things. Those are basically the basis upon which the actions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu interact with us. So they're hidden, but we understand that all of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does with us, for us, to us, are there in order to realize something behind. So there are two layers to everything. There's the bedrock, there's the sod upon which everything lays, and then the thing itself. Avos, the makom of Avos and Klal Yisrael is the makom of a bedrock. If you think about it, the word Av is a letters Aleph and Beis. In other words, the Aleph is Yisod. It's so to speak the Aleph upon which you can have a base. So an Av is somebody who is the one from which Hemshech happens. So their burial place is limited, and Dalet is a number that the Maral says represents Shetach. It represents the ground upon which. And we tend to think of Shetach as being squared, four-sided. When we talk about land and foundation, we talk about something that has Shetach upon which you're building. You speak about the four corners of the earth and so on. So the number four, the meaning of four translated into something and into quality is that quality of being a bedrock, is something you can do it on. And that's why he says you have Kiryas Arba. You know, these are the four pillars, so to speak. These are the four upon which everything else rests. Vein roye sheyishtatfu biyachad b'mokoyim mishu mokom v'yisod la'acher im oysem shey mokom elov. He says there is no common denominator between the shoresh, between the makom, to the things that are coming out of it. It's almost by definition has to be something outside. I don't want to confuse things terribly. There's one of the truths, understandings that we've come to is that no system can be internally closed and independent of something outside of itself. Everything sits on top of something else, which makes it interesting to figure out where does the final system rest on. But that idea that no system can be totally self-contained is something that we subscribe to. It has a name to it. It's something that is it's axiomatic for us. So it would be confusion, not understanding the difference between Avos and Banim is a foundational mistake in not understanding what Avos are. They're not all wonderful tzaddikim, and this tzaddik, and so on and so forth. I'd like to stretch this point a little bit more also, and I think it'll help us understand something. In halacha and in agada, there is there are lines of hierarchy. So chsimus haTalmud is mechayev everyone, all the time, everywhere. It makes a lot of that's halacha. Halacha is if it's in the Talmud, it's binding. If it's not, it's not binding per se. Why is it like that? So most shittas are because it had din of a Bez Nagadol, it was called Chachmei Yisrael, and had that strength. Chaznish argues, but be it as it may, that's it. But once we get past Chachmei Talmud, Chassimus Talmud, Rishonim, Achronim, early Achronim, later Achronim, and so on, why is it we don't argue? You always make the cheshbon of there was so much bigger, but you know, that seems to be a line that sort of can't. Why is it cut in certain places? I mean, is the pshat that it's it should always be every door is ahead of door before? I mean, you had exceptions, the Goyen, the Rav Shach Zayag, but by and large, the lines were kept pretty well. And I think it really has a lot more to do with a sense of tkufis. The Torah of Rishonim, compared to our Torah, is foundational. It's just the way it is, the nature of the Torah, the nature of the sweeping statements they made, the nature of... there's a recognition that it's layers of we sit on top of something, which sits on top of something, sits on top of something. And a machlokes of Rambam and Ramban or Rosh, for us, those are facts. And we may wonder why a third way couldn't be proposed, but we build on that. And we say, this is machlokes, why isn't the third way possible? There's a certain sense for us, it's not just each one is bigger than us, the one before me is bigger than me, and one before me is bigger than him. That has a lot more sense in terms of tkufas, that there's a certain a role that each tkufa serves as a basis for the next tkufa. And your role is not to build on the same plane as the door as the doros before, as the tkufa before. There's no, it's not carved out in rock. We don't know exactly. There's no official pronouncements of which kufa is what, but al kaponim, the idea itself that there's a foundation and we build on it is there. One more point this helps explain is also the musig lemashal, the avis. We say lebrisa shavram avinu, lachnis v'shavram avinu, and yet the Rambam says that the mitzvah mila comes from Sinai. The fact that Avram Avinu made a bris is wonderful, has nothing to do with us. And, you know, famous Rambam. The answer is, Avram laid the yisod for a bris, the musig of a person forging a bris, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the way it was done. That could not have been possible without the musig of bris being tavua and Klal Yisrael with Avram. The tzivui to do it, the chiv to do it, the tools to do it, the direction how to do it, that's Torah. But the musig of a bris, being kairis bris, Avram Avinu's kairis bris, and therefore any time we do a bris milah, we do two things. We mekayim specific details of what the Torah said, and we anchor it on the musig of bris that Avraham Avinu brought to Klal Yisrael. Okay, so that's why he said ve'ein roish eshtatfu biyachad. So that's why there was such a kpeid on dalet zugis, because the number dalet zugis is really the number of what it is that it's that we're talking about. I guess one or two more. It's just a very interesting topic. Chevron, where the others are buried, obviously, is something that is very tied together with Yerushalayim in many ways. And the Avoda, the highest, the climax of Avoda, the highest, most fundamental Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash was Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur's Avoda would start by Heir HaShemesh Ad Chevrei. In other words, and it was a conscious effort to connect the two. It's almost as if the Beis HaMikdash is here, but it rests on the bedrock of Chevron. Chevron is ke'ilu what Yerushalayim is standing on. And there was a, we made an effort to describe it as such. When the sun rises in Chevron, we can now start the Avoda here. That's really sort of what's being said over here. Okay, now the next piece of Gemara is, so we'd read part of the Gemara in Memches, and we saw the first piece of the Maral. Now the second part. It says, so we had this argument with Esav and the children of Yaakov. So they told him, we have a document. Amalu havuli igeris. Show me the document. Amrle garta barde Mitzrayim. It's in Mitzrayim. So uman nezel. There's no faxes. Who's gonna go? Nezel Naftoli de kol kayalta. Naftoli is very swift. He's like an ayala shlucha. Chsiv Naftoli ayala shlucha. He's a meshefer. Atem meshefer im a sefer. Chushim bedon tamon havi. So Chushim bedon was standing around. The Yakir, oh, he was deaf. Amalu mai hai. So he said, what's going on over here? I mean, why aren't they moving with the Leviah? Amalei kama akiv hai adi eisen aftolim adi Mitzrayim. You know, we're having this fight over here. Amalu hu va'adosin aftolim adi Mitzrayim yavi abo mutal bebizoyen. I don't say something. Until he comes back from Mitzrayim, he's going to be, you know, laying with Zoyen. Shokol kulfi. He took out a staff or a club. Machi Areshik knocked him on his head. Nosra Enei, his eyes fell out. V'noflan Akari de Yaakov, and his head fell down on Yaakov's feet. Paschino Yaakov le'nei v'achich. Yaakov opened his eyes, and he smiled. Einach siv yismach sadik hozenokom, pom of yurchatz b'dam ha'rosha. Okay, so you have this whole story over here, back and forth with Chushim ben Don. Very interesting story. What's happening here? The Chushim ben Don Taman Havi. So the Maral says, Yakirle Adna. Well, why didn't anybody else do it? I mean, there's a Chazal is saying Chushim ben Don did it. Who is Chushim ben Don? Like, why was it he that acted as opposed to anybody else? Zeo mipnei kelo yechoshvim mitchilas ha'mais yotzichon davar zeh. At the beginning, they didn't think that they would need to take such violent measures because she'ischil Esav lachloik lo yonimtzam etzam hisayrus. And when Esav started arguing, they were not so worked up. She'ein koach ha'is'oiris nimtze b'tchila, rak she'adovo chidush le'me'oid v'ashenoida. V'oz mis'oir b'koach lasis ma'isa. Shak has to come suddenly. And any time something builds up gradually, the ability to shak is lost. I mean, let's take a very simple physical example. A person walks into a pool and gradually it becomes warmer and hotter or colder. you can tolerate it a lot better than jumping straight into a much colder or hotter pool, because the body hasn't built up along with it. It hasn't sort of primed itself. The things that happen gradually lose the power of shock. There's another example that everybody uses, a car. The rubber bumper on top of a car, on the front of a car, what it does is, why is the rubber better than a metal? And the answer is because the impact on the metal is immediately causes a snapping. So you get all the energy of the impact immediately searing the metal and breaking it apart. Rubber condenses, and therefore a lot of the power is gradually dissipated. It takes a few seconds or milliseconds or whatever it is, but a lot longer in that. So what you're doing is you're taking the same amount of impact and spreading it over more time. You're dividing it by time. And therefore, it doesn't have the shock effect that something immediate has. So the Maharal says, the Gemara, that's the point the Gemara makes, that it was deaf. Everyone else had slowly been drawn into it, and slowly. And that's why, you know, a lot of times when you study history, you say, well, the Germans, and then they see this, then they see that. Everything, you know, it, as things happen gradually, you slowly adapt to it and adapt and adapt and adapt. And you don't realize what's happening. So anyone for anyone else, this was, they went down, they weren't expecting this. Asaph came, Asaph said, I deserve a place, you deserve a place. That's where we have the documents, where the documents, what I'm signed. The back and forth of it allowed for a gradual kind of losing of the shock, of momentum. He was deaf, and he found out about the whole story in one instant. And therefore, the shock was big enough to shock him into doing that. This was also one of the reasons why they would urge people not to engage in a dialogue with Rishoyim, Kaifrim, etc., because dialogue is a process. And so right now you're shocked. This person comes along and says, we want to be Mevatel Shabbos, whatever it is. So that's a shock, and you react violently, possibly, but if you engage in dialogue and back and forth and back and forth in dialogue, that itself sort of cools you down and you get used to things like negotiations. And why is it that you'd never agreed to that price when you started it, and when you finish the process, you do agree to it? And the psychology is, you start, right now I want $1,000 for it, you offer me $500 for it, that's shocking, no way. But as I begin back and forth, so my mind slowly readjusts to 900, readjusts to 800. When I'm down to 600, the jump to 500 is not so big anymore. So anytime, there's panam lekan, and one of the reasons, there was an inyan that for Dvarim Shebekdusha, a cooling down type of effect would be a problem. Person would not see something as being terrible. He just got so used to it that he's not shocked by it anymore. And so sometimes a person acts more coolly, person acts more rationally. I mean, acting hot-headedly and hot-temperedly is not always a terribly wise way to go. But on the other hand, when quick action is needed, doing something that if I slept and kind of, okay, and this and that, is not good either. So in this case, Chushim ben Dan had it right. He said he was shocked and did what he did. So he says over here, she'ein koach ha'es'oiris nimtza b'chatchila, rak ha'shadavu chidush le'mod. The only time when you have that type of awakening, that type of oomph, is when it's sudden, when it's a chiddush. Vozus oyer bekrach lasis meise. Bechushem edon shelo yoda mitchil za meise beklum. Bekasha kva hoyu bemachloikes. Vutzuchu leshloach acha araya. Ozem lechushem edon. Vozus oyer bekrach lasis meise. I want to add a comment. I guess, being today's Yom HaTzmaut, we can talk about current events. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, you have Kanoim. In America, you also have Kanoim. And you kind of, I mean, you know, I have very, very little sympathy, but I want to try to understand a little bit the difference between, I mean, am I Erlich Yid? He's Erlich Yid. I see a car going on Shabbos, I say it's terrible, we should mechazik ourselves, we should do something to other people, and he burns the car down. Again, I know very well what the issues there are, but I do want to point out one nekuda. We live in a bigger society, a broader society. So we've cooled down a lot. You know, we know that there are most of the people are not frum, and most of the people are not religious at all. And most people do this, most people do that, and we've seen it. So we've cooled down a lot in our sense of outrage. And therefore, when we see something maybe that pushes it another step, it doesn't trigger such a strong reaction. Somebody who lives, a kid who grows up in a society where nobody drove a car Shabbos, until he was 16, he never saw a Yid driving a car Shabbos, and someone drives in a car on Shabbos, it's like his whole world flipped around. He's shocked totally. In other words, it's an understanding of why a society like that would create a kanoi. In a healthy society, it's good that there are two voices. It's good that somebody says, "What are you talking about? Chil Shabbos, and you're discussing it? I mean, what have you come to?" The other side is, listen, there's reality out there, and unless we work out some reasonable compromise, it's going to be nonstop fighting. Nothing's going to be accomplished. There's a tendency for people who are part and parcel. It's like the second law of thermodynamics. Heat dissipates, and until everything reaches uniform temperature, and the hot is no longer hot, and that tends to happen because we become more adjusted, more used to it, and so on. So when someone comes along with the sensitivity of a person who's still in sort of an original pristine state of toiv and emes and so on, it's an important voice to have. I know very well that many of those voices are just troubled teenagers and not much more than that, and people with no seich. I don't need to convince, but I do want to understand that, you know, sometimes you see a person. I spoke when the Skelena Rebbe Zchanei Vracha spoke on the internet of Sifa, which was beamed into Baltimore via the internet, of course. He was kind of, you know, he was a saint, and he was a Kaddish, and he was a Torah, and he was speaking about, he just had, you know, no clue. And I spoke afterwards, and I said, you know, I said, imagine two people are discussing Baltimore. One person walks the streets of Baltimore, and one person flies over the plane. The person flying over the plane says, "I don't know what the problem with Baltimore is. 2-3 minutes, and you passed it, and I didn't find it dangerous, nothing." The other person says, "The place is a jungle. You can't walk Dalaramas without your life being in danger, and it goes on forever." I said, you know, it's important to understand that there are people who live in a different world. And it's not our world. We do have to find practical solutions. But understand that it's because we're already inside a certain framework. Understand that there's something beyond that framework. So you know, the Chushim Ben Dan didn't count as the greatest of the grandchildren. He's not given a place of honor as one of the Chushuvim, except for this. I don't know if he's mentioned anywhere else. But Tachlis, he was the one who because of his isolation, he produced the shock needed when shock was needed. It's just an important way of, I think, understanding things. Okay, we'll hold it here. Then he continues on why it is tough. It's a piece that needs some time itself. Why it is that Chushim Adan, of why, if he, besides the particular event, why is it that of all the children, Chushim Adan was the one that he had to be killed by? That's the next part of the morale.
Could I ask one question on what Rebbe just said? Would Rebbe say, based on that, that if someone, if let's say someone in their teenage years is a shtickle kanoi, but like, you know, not necessarily coming from kulo kedusha, but coming from a good place, but again, over the top. Or, so would Rebbe tell some one person, Taka, you should remain a kanoi for now, and someone else, you'd be a little more balanced, or Rebbe would actually try to help the kanoi become a little more balanced, like, meaning...
So Atene, I spoke about this like 2 days ago. We had a three series in yeshiva about students, parenting, you know, things of that for parents. So the third one, last lecture was Monday night on teenage years. And I mean, I described that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us with three tkufas in our life. Childhood, teenage, and adult. A child, the defining property of a child is you are dependent on your parents, not only financially and so on, emotionally, thinking-wise. Your ideas are whatever you pick up at home, as long as you have a reasonable relationship, as long as it's not a terribly, terribly dysfunctional home, those are going to be your bedrock of who you are. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then creates a teenage year to be mekayim the pasuk v'ken yazik ish esav es imo. You could never move away and form your own life physically, but more importantly, emotionally, intellectually, and so on, if you would be just a grown-up child. So what happens is the child pushes away violently. If I can give you a parallel case to that, it's like birth. A fetus is part and parcel of the mother. Gets all the antibodies to the mother. And one day there's these violent contractions. It's really very forceful and pushes the child out. You cut the navel cord. The child is expelled. And the same thing happens. So the child says, no, I'm my own person. I think and I know and I understand. And he's what a Malm says, his passions awaken, not only physical passions, justice, right, wrong, this is terrible, this is that. So it is not an indication of what's going to be later. It is what is important is to give him some element of freedom. You have no need to keep arguing with him, but let him hear the voice of reason so that when he becomes an adult, he has what to fall back on. In other words, when he then moves into a phase of life that he's an adult, if he has a paradigm, if he has sort of a structured thing, he'll come back to it. So it's not lost. I was speaking to somebody, a friend of mine had he was in England, and his son was like a 15-year-old, extremely top bacha, got into a stupid fight with his mashkichim, this derech halim, that derech halim. I'm amazed at the mashkich and the Rosh Hashiva. Like it wasn't the kid that he bit. They just had shittas, machlokas, quicker learning. So, I wondered, like, why is mashkich have a 15-year-old mind? But whatever it is. So he had to find a yeshiva in America. So they came here. They were here 2 or 3 days. And then, Baruch Hashem, he ended up in a very good place. But I was speaking with him. And, you know, I'd spent some time and... So I told him, I said, Yehuda, you don't understand what I'm going to tell you. I don't expect it. I want you to understand it. I just want you to, at some day, when you stop being a child and you become an adult, you'll remember another way of explaining everything, and then it'll click into place. And that's really what you're looking for. You're not going to, because it's not his teva. It's not his nature to be reasonable. I mean, I remember my own teenage, you know, I veered to the right, kanaz, whatever you want. I mean, anybody who spoke things that were balanced and measured, I felt he's compromising, he's a politician, he's gray, whatever pejorative you want to use. Today, when I think about things that I heard that turned me on then, I'm horrified. But, you know, that's the difference. So letting it be, but giving that voice in the back, we had a very different experience. I grew up when there was yeshivas were old people from Europe, Litvish people. They were out of sync with teenagers. They were all about balance, reason, thoughtfulness. Maybe it's not like you think. My father-in-law's, you know, whenever you'd come with any passionate argument of, you know, something that had a, you would finish, you would listen, then he would say, "So exactly, how do you know that?" And you'd fly off and say, "What do you mean? Everybody knows. Everybody's into that." And then he would just look poker face and say, "So how do you know it?" And he wouldn't. He would never play his hand. He would never tell you. But he would always basically, and it's become stuck. You know, like it came. You know, at some point it clicked into place. So you know that's the Teva Olam. I know here also. You know, kids become very turned on and very this one's that. And I tell the parents, you know, you need to be the adult voice. Don't worry. As long as you obviously put certain boundaries, but give him the chance to this. Don't. You know, it's not, it's a mistake to think that he's just going to be a bigger version of what he is. You know, he will change and metamorphosize into an adult. Mm-hmm.